All right, welcome everyone to another episode of the Commerce Marketer Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Zachwitz, and in today's discussion, we're going to talk about the online consumer experience and more so how it relates and centers around personalization, which is a very broad term. So to help me do that today, I am joined by Jared Blank. He's a Senior Vice President, Data Analysis and Insights over at Bluecore. So welcome and thanks for being here, Jared.
Great to be here.
Before we begin, why don't you set the stage a little bit for the audience? Give us a real quick background about yourself and about who and what Bluecore is.
Sure. I got to know Bluecore as a client. I used to run e-commerce at Tommy Hilfiger, and I joined Bluecore about a year ago. So my background is actually on the B2C marketing and e-commerce side, and I came over to Bluecore. Bluecore started as a triggered email solution, and we've really developed over the years into what we call a decision platform for commerce, meaning that we gather information about your customer behavior and match it up with the products on your site and the catalog that you have. And we're able to allow you as a marketer to go in and create audiences that are really targeted and allow you to communicate with those clients across your marketing stack and email and Facebook, paid search and so on.
Very cool. So you also went to the University of Michigan, correct?
Go Blue. Yes, I did.
Is Jim Harbaugh nuts or is he an eccentric genius?
He may be both of those things.
That's about all I have on Michigan. I got nothing else.
That's it. Okay. All right.
Let's get the personalization. So you guys do a lot of personalization across different platforms, like you mentioned, website, things like that.
Yes.
Personalization is a very broad term. So when I say personalization, you might think of one thing. I might think of something else when you say it. So what does personalization mean to you?
Personalization is presenting an experience, and oftentimes the experience means either a piece of creative or a product suggestions that matches up with what consumers have done or what we think they'll do. And so personalization, I think, like you said, is a ridiculously broad term. You know, I think I used to hear all the time direct marketers say things like, oh, it's about getting the right message in front of the right person at the right time. And it's kind of an ongoing joke here when someone says that. But also, it's kind of true. So it is about figuring out, hey, where should I speak to someone? When should I contact them? What do I get in front of? What message or product suggestions should I get in front of them? And that's a whole broad range of things. And I think the joke comes from people acted as if that's one thing, but it's dozens of things.
If it's dozens of things and it's got a span across different channels, different interactions, how do retailers prepare for that? Because there is technology everywhere now that can do something. There are platforms everywhere that can do something. There are consumers who are interacting on multiple devices. I don't expect a golden answer here because it's probably impossible to give. But how does a retailer effectively either do this today or start to do this? Or how should they approach it, if that's maybe a better question to ask?
Yeah, and I think what's so interesting about now, about 2017, is that the technology is ahead of the organization. That there are technologies to do what you're talking about, or certainly get you much closer to that. And what we found is the technology isn't the problem. The problem is either the organization, the marketing organization, isn't set up in a way for people from different groups to work together, or that you have set up a communication schedule like an email cadence, hey, we email people once a day, twice a day, that can't be interrupted because there are revenue needs tied to it. And so there are a number of technology approaches to solving what you brought up, but it really starts with, okay, as an organization, how do we need to change A, how we work across groups, and B, how can we be more flexible in how we think about speaking with our customers?
That's a really good point of the flexibility. Let's use a specific example because you mentioned email a minute ago. So, right, I'm a retailer and I start thinking, hey, we need to personalize emails. We should segment, but I think most retailers, especially small to mid-size these days, don't really have those resources to do so. So they can easily segment 50 different ways. They can't necessarily capitalize upon those 50 segments on a recurring basis. So if I'm a retailer and I just have resource limitations, but I know I want to personalize via email, what are some right ways that I can either start doing that or what's the approach that I should be taking to look at how to segment that in an effective and relatively scalable manner?
Well, you as the marketer, you know your business and you know the leverage points. So you have to think about, okay, for my business, where can I make the biggest impact? And so I think where people get caught up is, like you said, there's 50 ways to segment. You may not have a way of creating all of those segments, but you have to think about, you have to start with something. And so one of the ways we recommend, and this isn't a Blue Core specific thing because this is not going to be an advertisement, but one of the things we've done with our clients is once a month, we can create a bestseller's email that goes out toward the beginning of the month based on the category to which you have the most affinity or that you've looked at the most or last bought from. And that way the segment is, okay, these people are going to get, if you're an athletic company, these people will get running shoes bestsellers, these other people will get CrossFit bestsellers, these other people will get soccer bestsellers. And that's a way to personalize. It's an easy-ish way to start. But what we've even found with that is, again, it's not the technology, and it's not that people say, oh, wow, yeah, okay, sure, of course, that makes sense. Let me send bestsellers or new arrivals in the category people are interested in. It's, oh, God, you know, my merchants need emails to go out on these days with these products because they want these products merchandised with these other products, and everyone needs to get it, and I need to hit my numbers, and I blah, 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 blah. There's like a million reasons that are not related to personalizing your emails. Like, you've got this cadence, or you've promised marketing, offline marketing, that you'll send an email that day, or you'll promise merchandising. So that's where it gets hard, about how do we rethink what we're doing once we've even come up with the things you want to try. And so one suggestion we've made with a couple of our clients, and they've taken it on, is we call it Blue Core Day, where they say, okay, you know what, we're going to clear one day a month off our calendar to try a bunch of different segmentations. And that way I don't have to push off, do the thing where it's like, okay, I'll segment my list and some people will get this email that my merchant team wants to go out, and then we'll do some segmentations. They've said, no, you know what, we're going to take one day, clear the calendar, and just try a bunch of stuff. So it doesn't have to be Blue Core Day, but you can make it almost like your hackathon day. We're going to take one day, and that's when you're going to try all these crazy segmentations and see what works. Like I said, it is as much a calendar management and organizational thing as it is the technology to decide how to segment.
I actually love the idea of taking one day and dedicating to something like that. When I was working in running programs and then consulting, I did it a little more on running programs myself, which just trying to experiment with certain things when I had that opportunity to do so. I found that very few retailers do that because they kind of get into the day-to-day, right? It's the daily grind of, you touched on it, right? We've got to merchandise this for these retailers or for these brands. We have to do this, we have to do this. And usually people will sit there and say, oh, if I'm going to do segmenting on this day, I need to make it consistent and test it all month long or do this, as opposed to just jumping in the fire and being like, hey, let's see what sticks. So I love the idea, and I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, I'll tell you. So the other piece of this, inertia almost always wins out. It does. It's so easy to always do what you've always done. It really is. No one gets in trouble for that. And so it really takes someone internally, a type of person, to be able to say, you know what? No, 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 no. When we make our schedule for next month, we're going to try something a little bit different. And I know that means that we're going to have to give up 30% off sweaters on Monday the 3rd, right? And I'll take the hit, or we'll make it up someplace else. But you need to build that in, or you will do what so many retailers do, which is they have the exact email program they have today as they did in 1999, which seems completely insane to me. You know why they have that? Because it works. So on some level, it's not insane at all. Like, why would you change it? People still open their emails. People used to say email was dead in 1999. Email will never, you cannot kill email because it works. You have to have a strong point of view and a great relationship across your organization to be able to say, I know this works and it's worked for 18 years, but I just need 12 days a year to try something different.
So with trying something different, has there been anything that you guys have seen or have just seen emerge as trends as either touch points or different types of campaigns that through these kind of Blue Core days or these single hackathon days, you've found to be more effective or less effective than others? And it doesn't have to be email specific. It could be, hey, you know, we just scrapped email this day. We went right to Facebook and Instagram and just tried something new there. Anything from a touch point standpoint or a strategy standpoint you've seen work better or worse than others?
You know what I really like? I love, we've been doing some campaigns where We surfaced a handful of products that have converted really well, but weren't viewed a lot. And so we call these hidden gems, right? And so every merchant has hidden gems where you think, God, you know, if I could get this t-shirt in front of a bunch more people, I know it would sell. And so we've tried that. And so we have a tool where you can go in and find people who we predict will have an affinity for a certain product, but you don't even need that, right? I mean, you can come up with your own segment if you don't have Blue Core. And you can go to your merchants and say, hey, you know what? Give me 10 products that you want to try. And, you know, because typically the merchants only want to focus on products that they know they can sell a ton of, but maybe there's 10 of these hidden gems. And so you're building a rapport with your merchant team and they give you the 10 products and you segment out your list and you find, you create 10 segments or 5 or whatever it is. And on Blue Core Day or whatever your email, you know, tryout day, you just take it, you try and send out product specific emails for products that are not typically things you would send out. And we've seen a ton of success there, right? Because it's not just another 40% off this, 40% off that, the same things you've always gotten. And it gives your merchants, it builds your relationship with your merchant team who are always struggling to try new ideas and get more products in front of more people. And so I've loved that. So that's one thing, sort of product-specific emails, find the audience for sort of secondary products is one. And the second thing we're starting to see more people do is we're able to sync audiences that we create so you can segment your list and create an audience and push it out to your A/B testing tool like Monetate or Optimizely. And we've seen a bunch of success there because you can make the homepage or the landing page, sorry, you can update it to be personalized for whichever segment of people you're emailing to. And so we had said, one of our athletic clients has updated their homepage based on which segment they believe you're in. So if you have an affinity for a certain sport, the homepage updates for that. And we're seeing a lot of success with that because the homepage seems more relevant. So you get more clicking and ultimately more conversions. That's obviously more challenging to implement, but it's not impossible. And I think on the A/B testing tool side, people appreciate on some level that there's value there and have struggled to figure out new ways of using it to make an impact. And we've seen a pretty significant impact when we're able to take audiences that we've created in our tool, but again, doesn't have to be a Blue Core thing, to take these audiences and sync them with your A/B testing tool like a Monetate or an Optimizely or a Maximizer, and then personalize your homepage or landing pages. It really does get more people into the funnel, which means more conversions down the line.
Let's talk about the homepage optimization for a minute. There's a big push for web recommendations being intuitive on retailers' websites, same with email, but you want those things to be consistent. How important do you feel it is in today's age to actually customize, whether it's for segments or just everyone who comes to your site, customize those homepages, and whether that's content, navigation bars, just product recommendations? What are you seeing as the biggest push for personalization on the homepages? Is it an overhaul of the entire page, or is it more just small aspects of it? Like, hey, we think you're going to buy socks, so we'll just highlight some sock things here and make your sock navigation better. Where are you seeing the biggest bang for the buck?
It's been, I think typically we're seeing much smaller implementation, so like your sock example. But I think that's because most homepages were not designed in the last 12 months. They were designed a while ago. And so they weren't designed with the idea of, oh, we need a very prominent slot for which we are going to personalize all the time, that we're going to use one of these tools and slap it on that specific slot on the homepage, a prominent slot on the homepage, and we're always going to need 2, 3, 5, 12, whatever piece of creative that can go in there based on the characteristics of the visitor. The pages aren't designed to do that. And so people kind of make do with what they've got, which is why I think typically you see some impact, right? I mean, it works and it's certainly a great investment. But I don't think you land on a homepage and oftentimes it's completely rejiggered for you. But I think it's really more a function of a redesign or a homepage design wasn't done with that in mind. It's typically done like, oh, you know, we need a whole bunch of boxes here. And what's interesting is over time, design changes. So it used to be one giant image, and then maybe there were three boxes underneath it. And then companies started playing with, let's have 25 different boxes on the site. And you've had all sorts of different ways it's been designed. But I don't think any of them really took into account, okay, we're going to design this with the idea that the homepage needs to be personalized through one of these tools. How are we going to manage that? Until that happens, it's all going to be, you know, you see socks and you see shoes.
If I'm looking at, let's stick with the socks retailers, because apparently I have an affinity for socks. I'm on my hackathon day, or even if it's not just one of those hackathon days, right? I'm just sending an email, I've got a promo on socks coming up. A lot of times retailers will try to make the symmetrical marketing at that point. So my email is about socks, my social posts are around socks, maybe my ads are around socks, and I've just got the symmetry going across. How important is it to do this symmetry? And if it is important to do symmetry, how do you balance that for those one day a month where you're just kind of throwing stuff at a wall to see what sticks?
I mean, you can send people to different landing pages on those standalone days. Like, the standalone day should have the similar symmetry. It doesn't mean you need the full suite of touch points to all be related, but it should be. I mean, you should be sending people to the landing page that responds to the email you sent. I was kind of laughing because I was thinking, how sad is it that it's a victory when you, as the director of e-commerce, can get someone to make an email about socks, convince your social team to post some stuff about socks, to make the landing page about socks, and your ads team to buy sock inventory someplace. Right? Even how is it that that's as far as we've gotten? Because I agree with you, A, that is a victory, and B, not everyone is even at that point. But how sad is it? And we can transition to this. This is why everyone's lunch is being eaten by Amazon. Because this is, I think, so many brands think about it like, wow, you know, we really did a great job. We sent an email about socks, and the landing page had socks on it, and my social team put up a picture of socks on Instagram, and we win. And like, the Amazon has created their own airline and drones to deliver socks in 12 seconds. Like, everyone's playing a different game, right? So many brands are playing a game of, gee, I really hope I can just get these teams to talk to each other, while the incredibly sophisticated companies out there aren't even thinking about that. They are approaching this either in the Amazon way, where how can we rethink every single thing we've ever done, or like in the Warby Parker or Bonobos or Indochino, so many of these little companies, or now growing companies, have just rethought the whole thing from the beginning of, oh, what if our stores weren't 5,000 square feet? They were 1,000 square feet and they were on the second floor. Like, that changes retail. While you're sitting there trying to convince your social media marketing person to put a picture of socks on Instagram, you're playing a different game. Like, if you're even having these discussions, you are going to lose.
A lot of retailers are having these discussions. It's the nature of the beast, right? Which is, you said, a very big challenge for them, especially when you're, I mean, if you're selling a commodity like a sock, Amazon's churning those things out, you know, by the day. So is personalization the way to compete with Amazon? And is it only a piece of how you compete with Amazon? Or do you just need to reorganize and realign your internal priorities before you can even consider trying to compete with Amazon? Because, again, if your big win is aligning your marketing internally, you're 12 steps behind already. So what do companies do? What do retailers do to compete with Amazon if they are in one of these fragmented marketing departments?
So everyone at Bluecore is tired of me saying this, but I'll say it here because you haven't been at Bluecore. Every CMO, and probably every CEO, but every CMO of a retailer should be asking themselves the question, in a world where Amazon exists, what do I do? Because the answer may not be, I have to compete with Amazon. The answer might be, Amazon should sell my stuff, and my website should be for marketing. Or Amazon should sell all this commodity product. There's no reason for me to sell core t-shirts on my site. Amazon does a bang-up job of doing that. I should have a totally different selection. Amazon may be a distribution channel question. It may not be an existential question. And so you might be thinking, if you think about it in terms of, okay, Amazon is a distribution channel, it's not a competitor. Macy's is a distribution channel and a competitor on some level for a retailer, right? I mean, Lord & Taylor or Saks or Walmart are all distribution channels, I guess, and competitors. But people thought of Amazon as just a competitor. They're not. They are as much a partner and possibly a great partner as anything else. And so if you're thinking about, in this world where Amazon exists, what product is better off sold through Amazon? Like, give it to them. Amazing. It's a great experience. Your customers will love you for it. And then what does that mean for your site? And I think what it means is there is probably an assortment of products that is not right for Amazon, that is right for you, and that personalization on whatever level is a part of that because you have your customers' data. Amazon has some, but it's wrapped up in all of the billions of SKUs they have. You know more about your customers than anyone else does, which means that you can get product in front of people who would be interested in it at the right price, the right time, all of that. It communicate in a way that reflects who you are as a brand. You can do that because you have access to customer data and can make decisions. Amazon doesn't really have that on the same level. So yeah, I think you can thrive in a world where Amazon exists with Amazon being a great distribution partner for you. But if you're going to start with, oh, how do I compete with them? Meaning, how do I out Amazon by selling the same shirts at the same price? You won't. You'll lose. You will not deliver your products as fast. You will not have as good customer service, right? Like all of the, you do not have Prime. You will not get it in there in an hour. All of the things that Amazon does amazingly, you will not do if you're just selling a basic product. So let them have it. Let them have it. I was talking to an apparel company recently who has, in the past 6-12 months, totally rethought their distribution strategy with Amazon and have gotten to a place where they're thrilled with Amazon, that it isn't a competitor, that they said, there's a right assortment for Amazon and we're going to give it to them. And for them, it's been great. It allows them to focus on what makes us different. Let us tell a story about our brand through our product that's not just about basics. It's an opportunity, and if you look at it the right way.
It's almost looking at Amazon as the frenemies model, right? They're an enemy in some fashion, but they can also be your best friend in some fashion.
Yeah, apparel companies have almost always had, not specialty retailers is a different thing to an extent, but apparel companies have always had wholesale partners. And Amazon, because it got so big, became thought of for some period as an enemy, I guess, or something to fear. But Macy's sort of became that too, as they started to eat up all the department stores, the regional department stores around them. And I think what happened was apparel companies that have been around a long time had a nice sort of a fragmented distribution model where there were a ton of regional department stores and no one chain really, you weren't too reliant on any one chain, and you had a pretty healthy mix maybe of your own stores, of department stores, international business. And then all of a sudden, Macy's started to eat everybody up, and you became a little bit too reliant on Macy's. And then Macy's became much more of a discounter and started to really kill your brand, right? And so Coach went through this, and Coach decided, we're putting an end to this. Coach said, we're no longer going to have the same assortments everywhere. We're going to find the right assortment for the right channel. That's brilliant, right? And they weren't thinking of department stores as enemies. They thought, there's a right product assortment for that channel. And that's how I'm saying to think about Amazon. It is a channel. And if you make an assortment for that channel that's right for that channel, it's a victory for everybody. It really is.
You mentioned before, if you're selling on a specific set of products or finding out where Amazon's going to assist you with capitalizing upon potential revenue, whatever you're doing there, you also mentioned, hey, let's tell our brand story through our site on the products that make most sense. Let's use Amazon to do the other things that don't make quite that sense. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit and take it back to, hey, let's tell our brand story the way we want to tell it, and let's control that environment. And some of that's going to come down to personalization as well. So we're going to circle back to that key overarching generic term. What are some of the ways, if I'm a retailer and I'm selling a set of products through my own site and I want to personalize that experience, I want to tell my brand story, what are some of the key pieces of personalization technology that you would recommend that I use as a retailer? And that could be browsing behavior to trigger messages. It could be something completely unrelated. But what are some of those key pieces that you recommend as me as a retailer to start with?
So email is still the easiest channel for personalizing. You can do it on your website, absolutely. There becomes a challenge there around implementing that tech and keeping up enough content. I think that becomes harder on your website. But through email, being able to figure out, okay, you know what? Your typical apparel retailer, once a month you get a new delivery of product in. You know, historically you might say, oh, there's new spring product, new arrivals, and you just send a new arrivals email, and there's a woman and a dress, right? And that goes out. And like, that's your email, which is not great. What I'm saying is, Bluecore does this. You have we know what categories people have an affinity for, so we use some predictive algorithms to do that. But if you don't have that, you can use browse behavior. It's not as good. You won't have as wide an audience, but that's a place to start. We can figure out which products or categories people have an affinity to, and you can then personalize the new arrivals email. So people who have an affinity for dresses get one with dress creative. People who have an affinity for shorts get shorts creative. People who like sandals get sandals creative. And you're telling the message you want, but tailored to the individual. That's where you can start. It's by taking the things that you're doing en masse now and figuring out how do we take that one step more personalized. And then when you work with someone to do your triggered email programs, you can do all the follow-up from that. So if someone clicks on that personalized dress new arrivals email and they go to view dresses, if they don't buy anything, you would follow up with a called category browse, where, okay, people viewed this category but didn't buy anything. We'll follow up with an email there. And like, you create these programs with the combination of triggered emails based on behaviors and the more sort of personalized blast emails, where you're taking the emails you're doing either around new arrivals or bestsellers and personalizing them. And that gets you closer to what we're talking about. I think it just becomes, if everyone forever has talked about one-to-one, that just becomes very challenging and overwhelming when you think about it. I prefer to think about it, hey, what are we doing now that can be one step better? That will get you so much further than trying to rethink end-to-end everything you're doing. And I happened to be at a retailer a couple months back, and we had a meeting there. And I walked into the room, and there's a whiteboard that went like around the entire conference room, and it was filled with how they were rethinking personalization. And it was like a million touch points, right? Because it was your website and email and loyalty programs and store associates and clienteling. And it made me want to cry, because no, you'll never get your head around that. It's too many things. And so if you start with, all right, there's this email we do once a month with new arrivals, how can we make that one step better? That will get your team thinking in that way. And so part of this also is always, right, it's a cultural thing. How do you get your team to think differently than just, hey, just let's always do what you always did? Pick a thing that you've done, make it one step better than it was.
I think that's really great advice for anyone listening, because it's one of the things that, one, is scalable. Two, you don't need a lot of resources theoretically to do it, right? If I want to make one thing that I'm responsible for better, I can do so in the most part. So I think it's really good advice to lay it out that way, because you're right. If you're going to climb a mountain, you've got to take the step at a time to get up there.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you saying that, because I think it's something that anyone can walk away after listening to this and say, yep, I can do that. And I think the example of the email, hey, we send this email out there. What's the one thing I can do to that email to make it better? Or I do this, what's the one thing to that SMS message I can do better? So great advice. You know, mobile phones, we didn't really touch on mobile a whole lot, but we're talking about technology being far advanced over what people want to do and everything's out there. Mobile phones are obviously changing, but they're really redefining how consumers interact with retailers, expectations, checkout pages, all these things are being integrated. How do you see consumer personalization changing over the next 5 years, knowing that technology is changing faster than really consumers are adopting it?
I think that 5 years from now, email will be a little bit better. And I think we will have tried a whole bunch of things that didn't work. I think that the store of the future idea, where we're going to have beacons and the mirror, the magic mirror kind of thingy in the store, is going to be able to recommend things to you and that kind of stuff, and you walk in the store and you'll get a coupon for shirts because you're heading towards the shirts, is going to suck up an enormous amount of energy and make very, very little difference. And I think if I were a company, and if I were the head of whatever for some company, I would invest in the $12 an hour employee right now who is poorly trained, in getting him or her way better training and knowledge about the products you have. There is no better personalization tool than Amanda, who's greeting your customers at the door of the Gap. She is your best investment. You have 8 people in the store already who are excited about selling your product. They want to know more, so that when someone walks in, they don't need some crazy device saying, oh, this is Jared. And last time he bought khakis. Like, you look at them and they know who I am because they're looking at me. They just need to be trained that, oh, I remember this stuff just came in, right? Like, he's going to love these khakis because they're slim fit, they're this, they're that. Train your employees. You have this amazing tool in your store already. And while everyone is playing around with some goofiness, which is fine to spend a couple of dollars there, I think we've missed out on the best resource you've got, staff. Go train them.
I think for brick and mortar retailers, I'm going to extend the conversation now. I think that's a challenge because a lot of them you have, I don't want to lump generations in here, but you generally have younger store employees, right? And maybe your high-end are professional salespeople or professional retail staff people. But a lot of times you have these younger employees that it's just a job for them, right? They don't really care if you buy and don't buy. And I think that's a significant challenge because as people go into stores, they want a better experience. They want that salesperson to guide them or to favorably answer questions and help them along. And I think that's where a major disconnect comes in. And I think retailers, at least some of the larger ones that would generally hire, whether it's high school kids or fresh out of high school, maybe college kids, they look at technology as a way to, I don't want to say overcome those behaviors of their employees, but they use it to guide the consumer knowing that, hey, this person's going to be working here for 6 months, 9 months. They're not really completely invested in our company, but we don't want them to be a negative face of the company. I think that's going to be a big challenge moving forward. I think it's a challenge now, at least for a lot of retailers, not all, but I think it is going to be a challenge moving forward for them. I don't know if you have any insights into that or just general comments on it. If not, that's fine as well. But anything you want to share with that?
Of course it's a challenge, right? But how does, if you walk in and there's a $9 an hour employee who doesn't know anything, who says, okay, welcome, good luck, go finding some stuff, right? And they're not paying attention to you and you go grab a thing and try it on in the dressing room and there's a mirror making suggestions. Like, how does that all fit together? How does that even make any sense? And so it's an incentive issue, right? To what you said, okay, if someone's getting paid very little and we only expect them to be here for 6 months, no, that's not on millennials. That's on you, the employer. And there are examples of companies that have rethought that model. In-N-Out Burger has rethought that model. Costco has rethought that model. Trader Joe's has rethought that model. That it is a cop-out to say there's no way to address that. You may not want to address it. That's fine. But it's an addressable problem. There's ways, or Applebee's has addressed it, right? Like, there are companies that have figured this out. And so you as the company may not want to deal with it, but that's as much the future as magical digital products. Magical digital products are amazing if complemented with great service. They are not amazing on their own if the experience in the store is terrible. And so you got to think about how you want to look at it, right? So I don't buy it's not that it's a problem that can't be fixed. I think you as the retailer has to think about, all right, what do I want from my staff? And if people are going to malls less, especially B and below level malls, and they're buying less from retailers once they're in the store, or they're going to fewer stores when they're in the mall, what can I do about that? One of the things you can do about that is when they do come in, get them to buy more. And the way you do that is to train your employees. And that also comes with investment, meaning you need them to stay longer. And so does that mean like Starbucks where you have to give them whatever, health insurance and retirement? Maybe. You're the CFO, go figure out whether that makes sense for you. But it's a solvable problem. It's just up for you to decide whether you want to solve it.
I think the Starbucks example is a good one, right? Because it fits very well. It's high traffic, people coming in. You have very little time to interact with someone, yet people always seem to love the baristas there. So it's a good example.
They chose that model because that makes sense for their brand, for what the things that they say they stand for, what they believe is important about the interaction. McDonald's has a totally different model, right? You can turn over employees. I'm not saying McDonald's doesn't care about their staff. They totally do, in whatever way that means for McDonald's. But part of the way their stores are set up is you can bring people in and have them trained and up and running incredibly quickly. That matters to them. And so they've set up their structure and their hiring and training and incentives and benefits for that. But that it's followed through the whole way. Every part of that system relies on that. At Starbucks, every part of that system relies on bringing in people at a bit of a higher wage, part-time employees having benefits and all of those things, because that makes sense for them, right? It's they figured out a solution that works for them, as is Trader Joe's or any of these where it's a bit more progressive is a loaded term, but where they've rethought what their needs are. And so, yeah, it's a big, complicated issue that there are lots of examples of how it's been solved.
I think this transcends very well to the conversation we were having a few moments ago with, hey, what's the one thing you can do and make it better? And I think this is the same principle. We're just in a retail space, right? A physical retail store. So, hey, how do we want to improve what we do for our consumers and for our overall benefit? I think the same thing goes online, right? Looking at, hey, what do our consumers want? What can we do on our website to make something a little bit better that our consumers want that we know we have this challenge for? So I don't know if that makes sense, but I think it's transferable both to the online and the physical world, where if you look at what your audience wants, what you want to provide the audience, and you can make that overall experience, whether it's a personalized email, whether it's a personalized landing page or home page for that person versus a personalized in-store experience, I think it's all symmetrical at that point. Jared, I'm gonna get you out of here on a game show type question. I'm gonna give you 15 seconds, and in 15 seconds or less, name as many fish as you can. Go.
Trey Anastasio, Mike Gordon, tuna, salmon, white, shark, sea bass.
And your time is up. Okay, so what was the first one you mentioned?
Trey Anastasio, he's the lead singer of Fish.
Okay, I did not know that. I know who Fish is, but I did not know his name. That was...
And then I couldn't think of any of the people in Fish. I kept thinking, my brother loves Fish. Who are the other people in Fish? Then I was like, stop thinking about that. Just say tuna.
So that is the first time anyone has taken that question to a musical element. So you get bonus points for that. I'll give it
Fantastic.
To you.
Fantastic. I need bonus.
All right. So Jared Blank, Senior Vice President, Data Analysis and Insights at Bluecore. Jared, thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate you having the conversation with me. Any closing remarks or anything that maybe we neglected to talk about that you feel is important for the conversation today?
Oh, I could talk about this stuff for forever. So no, if there's not one thing, you'll have to have me back on.
We could just keep going for a couple of hours if you want.
I'll clear my calendar.
Yeah, I got nothing else to do. All right, Jared, thanks so much for your time today, and I appreciate it, and look forward to the conversation. Let's definitely do this again. So thanks everyone for listening to another episode of the Commerce Marketer Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Zachwitz, and we will catch you next time.